You're listening to Inspirato Projecto.
So I'm out here on the balcony, and oh, thank you, by the way, for that awesome intro, Man Behind the Machine. Thank you for that. I have the window open here by my balcony. A butterfly just flew past. That was awesome. Oh, hey there. Hey there. There goes butterfly. All we need now is a hummingbird. I would not be surprised. Oh, there goes the butterfly. I would not be surprised if that hummingbird came back again. Or a couple of them. It's been known to happen out here. I've gained quite a good relationship with these plants, with these trees. You see me looking at you. Look at that. You start waving when I look at you, don't you? I see you over there. I see you over there. So I'm out here on the balcony, and I got the window open just in case the cat wants to come out here. And then I was reminded of all the times growing up and my parents going, "Don't, you know, what are you trying to do? You can't leave the door open. We got the air conditioning on. It's going to run up the electricity bill." But, you know, there's that famous phrase we hear it all the time. What are you trying to do, air condition the neighborhood? And so this idea just came into my mind about this idea, about this guy who has this air conditioning that it's so strong that he has got to open up. Like, it just won't turn off. It just keeps going and going. And so he's got to open up the windows of his house. It's so cold. And it does end up so cold, it ends up air conditioning the neighborhood. And everyone's scratching their heads going, "What the heck?" Until eventually someone ends up following it down the rabbit hole and realizing this guy's fault. But hey, what the heck? The air conditioning unit just will not shut off. It's got a mind of its own. And it could very well possibly be one of the first signs of AI waking up. Maybe he's got one of those smart homes. The AI homes. RFID chips everywhere. They can track you better with your RFID chips. Did I tell you about... Oh, wow. This is a fun idea. My brother and I... Wow, this is fun. Here's an idea. I don't know if I read this to you guys yet or not. This is in my idea book that has the Bookhouse Boys insignia on it from Twin Peaks. Okay, so before I get into this one, I'll tell you about another idea that I think could dovetail definitely with this one that I'm about to tell you. First, I want to tell you about this one. This one is an idea I had about a kid who rides his bike around the block. Maybe he's got a basket in his bike. And he's got his own microtransmitter. So he can broadcast his own radio station. So this little kid, he rides his bike around. And he broadcasts his show. And he just keeps going. Going and going and going. And the neighborhood, those who live in a neighborhood, you know, his buddies, his friends, maybe they end up going up to the local thrift store. They end up spending their allowance on old radios. Just for kicks. Rather than digital. Old radios. And they're able to tune in. You know, like Mr. Microphone, that kind of thing. Mr. Microphone is a micro-broadcasting device. If you amp up that signal... Because the Mr. Microphone, the way that that works, some of you know... You have to find a frequency on a radio station that has nothing on it. Barren landscape. Whiteboard. Just open... Open dance floor. Lots of elbow room. The tabula rasa. As John Locke used to say, the tabula rasa, the blank tablet. So, you need that empty station. And then the Mr. Microphone somehow tunes into that, and then you talk through your microphone, which is like a wireless thing, which is also equally awesome, and that broadcasts to the radio. So whatever radio happens to be tuned into that, bam, your voice can come over that thing. So let's say this kid, he through his electronics class, whatnot, he figures out how to boost the signal. And people, you know, he's telling the news of the local neighborhood. He's introducing them with maybe he loves going to the library. Maybe this kid loves going to the library. And he loves sharing. I remember, for instance, I'd go to the library, and there was this Edgar Allan Poe. It was an illustrated Edgar Allan Poe that I came across, and I feel so bad saying this out loud, but I stole that book. You know, here, libraries are a place where these books, the beautiful thing about them is that they're free. They're there. They're there for you all the time. Those books. Well, it just clutters up your house if you're going to steal a book from the library. You might as well just, it's there. You can borrow it for 2 weeks, whatever, put it back, let someone else borrow it. And, you know, that's just the courteous thing to do. The other courteous thing to do is to donate your books to that library. If you've got old books, that's a nice thing to do. Share with others the great information. So that's what this kid does. He loves going into the, you know, maybe the microfiche archives. Maybe he just loves his books. Maybe he tells news stories about Encyclopedia Brown. All the old classics, all the great lessons, all the great stuff. And so he becomes sort of like the education for the neighborhood. And like the little kids, instead of watching Disney shows, they decide, no, I like this instead. This is great. They get to learn about their neighbors. And the kid, let's say there are other kids there who play. Let's say there's a kid who plays violin. Let's say there's a kid who plays guitar or whatever. I can imagine them somehow hooking up with this kid in a way where they're able to play it through his thing, you know, and then broadcasting out to the radio shows. And I'm imagining too, maybe the kid. I was imagining this, like the kid likes to rap, and his little he's got some kind of beat that plays, and so he decides, oh, I'm going to put on a concert, and, oh, let's see, so, okay, a couple ways, this kid could ride around the block, and also I'm imagining, like, a neighborhood that's sort of like in a circle. They face inward to, let's say, a fountain or some thing that's in the middle. Like, there's this playground. I'm immediately getting this idea of this playground that was my parents would take me to growing up, that just had great playground equipment on it, and it was looked like a snail of sorts. It was a ladder that curled upside down, and it kind of dumbfounded me because I always wanted to crawl upside down on this ladder, but there's just no way to, you know, I couldn't hold on. It baffled me. So it was in the middle of this neighborhood, and there was kind of like a circle. Everyone was kind of around it. So I'm imagining something like that with this kid. So maybe he puts on a, you know, he's just driving around in circles for hours on end, putting on his radio show. So he decides to put on his rap concert, he calls it, and any of the neighbors are allowed to, you know, be there for it. And they sit in the middle of this circle. It's like a theater in the round. Like a parade, a circular parade, which would also be fun. a circular parade, a block party. How would you do that? You block off, it'd be like a block party, you block it off somehow. So, let's think about that. Now to get to the thing my brother and I had played around with the idea of. So he was talking about the Bad News Bears, and he goes, oh, what about a movie called The Good News Bears? And I thought, ooh. And then he started telling me about this paper route he grew up doing. He did a paper route for a short time. He was telling me about all the, you know, everything that goes into it. And so there'd be this idea, The Good News Bears. It's kids putting cartoons and messages into the papers they have on their paper route. They put those in there. Maybe it's a zine. You know, maybe these kids put together a zine, and on their paper route, they put that little zine into the newspaper route. So you got a gross art kid, a kid who grows a lot of he draws a lot of crazy maniacal art. Maybe he's goth. For some reason, that's popping into my mind. I grew up a kid named Rob Garwacki in high school. He used to draw the craziest, craziest art. That kid was so good. He inspired me so much to draw in a style which, at the time, I was just calling it ugly art. And I've seen that term end up being used years down the line. Ugly, ugly art. My art style is similar to my big influencers growing up. Mike Allred, who draws Madman, and Ben Allred. Mike Allred, Ben Edlund. Edlund. It's such a great name. Edlund. Ben Edlund and Mike Allred. They were big influences to me. So my art style is in the back of my brain, always rattling around with that kind of art style. Ugly art, I guess. So you got this gross art kid, draws all the maniacal art. Then you got a very responsible kid. He's got the paper out. He also hires himself out to mow the lawns, to do the roof shingling. This kid is based on our buddy Rob Houston growing up. This kid was always, I mean, very, very, you know, if there ever was a way to apply the term work ethic, ooh, he's got a good, strong work ethic. Rob Houston is the guy to apply that to. He ended up working for his dad's landscaping company, learning how to lay concrete, fix stuff. I mean, this guy, he was babysitting kids. He himself was almost a kid. He was babysitting. He was amazing. He was astounding. And he comes from a family, a mixed race, mixed family. His mom is a white gal. His dad's a black guy. And that was the first family to grow up on our block. It was our first time we had a black guy on the block. And it was awesome. It was a great lesson in just accepting people for who they were. Across the street there's a woman named Kathy Bonomo. Large, large, large woman. Think of What's Eating Gilbert Grape. She was not as big as that. She was close. And they fostered, I guess, or adopted lots of retarded children. Be at least, I don't know, four or five, by lots that, you know, I guess I should use the word several, but four or five. And it was interesting. I remember when they first moved in, and I'd met them. These kids, I remember them. There's something, you know, they're my age, but they were a little, you know, I didn't know. I couldn't put my finger on it. I just remember having them over in my backyard, and we were playing on the play, on my, I had a swing set back there. And they were new, and I invited them in the backyard. Wow, it's so interesting. I'm getting so many memories. So anyway, I remember Kathy Bonomo, she had, at her house, she had this crystal ball. And her friend, possibly her lover, we didn't know, Denise, she foster mother, she, this crystal ball would be on the wall. They're like, don't touch that crystal ball. You know, it's bad things have happened to anyone who's touched that crystal ball. So there was always like this, and I'm like, well, why don't you throw it away? And I go, no, that would be, you know, we would be cursed. In my backyard, behind us was a house. They're called the Baylogs. These kids grew up without a TV. Growing up, you know, watching Elf and all these TV shows as a kid, it was puzzling to us. Like, how do you grow up without a TV? So they don't know about all of these things that we know about. They don't know about all of these things that are on television. And what came with that was that these kids kind of started, I don't know if they made weapons or if they started, anyway, we had a cat named Peace. She had what looked like a peace sign on her forehead. Calico cat, Peace. Peace and Soot. Soot was a little black cat. And that kid, one of the sons, tried shooting her with an arrow. He missed, thank God. I would say if you're going to raise your kids without television, replace it with, you know, the programming that you wish was on television instead. Replace it. Give them something. Please let them know about cooperation. Please let them know about compassion. Please let them know about please and thank you. Please let them know about being kind to others, and especially others' pets. When you grow up with an animal, you form a relationship with that animal, a bond. You there becomes this amazing dialogue that can occur between you and the animals, and you're not even truly speaking the same language. You learn how to speak the truest same language, which is just the natural unfolding of the universe. You learn each other's kind of body language. So this kid tried to shoot our cat, and I remember he shot out our window with a BB gun. We ended up putting up a plexiglass window. I don't know if anyone ever talked to his dad about that. The folks next door, their son Andy, I believe his name is, they had a dog named Shadow. He had one brown eye and one blue eye. I found that fascinating. And he was like a calico dog, now that I think about it. And that kid, Andy, became friends with one of the Baylogs. I remember one day I saw Andy then swinging a mace. At that time, I was playing Dungeons & Dragons. And I'm like, oh my God, he's got a mace? Which is, or I guess you'd call it ball and chain. As far as I was concerned, it was a mace. Because I had a character in Dungeons & Dragons who had a mace. And it was amazing. to see that in person. The handle, the chain on the end, the spiky ball. And I remember, you know, during that time I was watching Doctor Who. Tom Baker. We had a black and white television set in our bedroom. And it got a few channels. I was so happy it got channel 60, or was it 66, where they had Samurai Sunday. And one of those channels, Doctor Who would play. He had that long scarf. And the kid next door, Andy, ended up having that scarf. It was interesting because I didn't know the colors of that scarf because it was a black and white television. The TV in our living room was color, and my dad built it. My dad actually built it. So the back of it was exposed. There were all these little things sticking out the back of it. I remember it looking like buildings. Like, the closest thing I could compare it to was when Star Wars came out and they're flying along, you know, these big ships, Star Destroyers, and Death Star, and it looks like buildings. It's like they're that intricate, the pipes and the it just looked like a building or something. That's the only way I could explain it, like a bird's eye view. And so that's what it kind of looked like. I remember we call him Uncle Rob. My dad knew him from Vietnam. And he would come by on his motorcycle, and he would bring more circuitry. And so they would plug it into this thing, and they're building this thing. And in one day, it becomes a TV, and we're watching TV on it. It's incredible. So we had that for eons. Eons. So. Wow. So Andy, one day he had that scarf. It was a long scarf. Someone had, I don't know if he talked his mom into yarning it together or what, but this, it was long, and I was just fully fascinated by that. And then decades later, it turns out an elementary school friend of mine, Renee Worrell, you know, I had lost contact with her and then regained contact with her once Facebook came out, and I had posted some of my paintings on Facebook, paintings, drawings, and she sent me a message. She goes, "Oh my gosh, can you send me a painting? Could you make me a painting? I'll pay you. I'll buy you the art supplies, and you know, I'll pay you to make this painting. And here's kind of the idea that I'm thinking." And she said, I'll pay for the shipping. And I said, okay, how about this? Instead of you buying the painting, how about this? I know that you know how to sew. Can you sew me a Doctor Who scarf? It's been a dream of mine. And so she went online. She was able to find a blueprint. She made this, like, 30-foot-long Doctor Who scarf. I have it now wrapped around my chair. I got it wrapped all around my chair, my office chair. Oh, man, so cool. So, now, back to this thing. Good news bears, we call it. So, okay, so you got the very responsible kid, based on Rob Houston. He's always lawn mowing, changing people's roofs, shingles, paper route, maybe laying new concrete driveways, just stuff that you would not expect a 12-year-old kid knowing how to do. You got a health kid who knows all about the alternative medicines, all the great stuff. His family has an ozonated water machine. Heck, maybe the kid built it. I don't know. Maybe he builds it with the help of the very responsible kid. Got a conspiracy theory kid who's obsessed with all the JFK stuff, QAnon stuff. He's talked very matter-of-factly about the information without being preachy. It's like he's just matter-of-fact. Like, it's like, I know about this. Why don't you know about this? I remember growing up watching. And you know what? I think, too, this conspiracy theory kid, I think we could definitely say that he's been abducted by aliens. Not in a scary, frightful, but a very mystifying way. He has this story that he tells kids at school. And I remember growing up, and on Channel 60 or 66, where the, you know, Samurai Sunday show is on, there was... Well, Voltron appeared on one of those UHF stations. And I felt like this was the thing. Like, at school, I wouldn't hear teachers or anyone really actually ever mention the outside world. It was as if it didn't exist. And it was always a pleasure when I'd hear someone, like, when I'd hear a teacher, an authority figure, an adult, talk about the outside world. It seemed like they were truly separate realities. Wow, now that I think about it, wow, now that I'm realizing it, it's just coming to me. The universe gave me that gift. It presented me with my first examples of parallel universes, so to speak. My first examples of a parallel universe. The idea that, you know, our realities are relative to us. Gosh, it was so crazy. That idea of, like, this is happening here. And, you know, that's happening there. And they're just not blending. I'm gonna play for you guys right now. I guess I've been drinking this coffee. I gotta urinate like a banshee. I'm gonna play for you some Wordland. This is the album. This is actually Brett Berman's project from Nitroglycerin Pep Club. I'm gonna play this for you just right over, right through here. Let's see. This is good. I'm gonna put it right next to the speaker. Here we go. This one is called... Oh, this is good. This is called... How about... Global Elitist. That sounds like a fun one. Here we go.
Vanished without a trace.
He always bowed.
Your job's a joke, you're broke, your love life's DOA.
I've told you 50,000 times to stay out of my arch to you.
If you live to be 85, buddy, you're living.
Buick Special sweeps Class C of mobile gas economy run, placing first and second.
I'm in kind of a lull right now in my mind, you know what I'm saying? It's just ridiculous. I mean, come on.
And that can help me drift off to sleep.
That's geek speak for the actual satellite channel and audio channels that we use to record it on.
Well, I think I'll keep the chemistry set.
I'm real wary of fish with bones.
Now, Kraft salad oil is more than just a new oil. It's a new kind of oil.
Really good.
Why didn't you say that in the first place?
Very sloppy. Very sloppy.
Got to be done.
Maybe you get just the button that you need. You know, the little moose, maybe, or Goofy, or Beezy.
And, of course, what they would do, they would have to come to the obvious conclusion that no recognizable intellect resides on this planet.
Class,
and thundery.
By the makers of Tums, famous quick relief for acid indigestion.
Behind my very consciousness, a man who, while at times it makes people wait when he shouldn't ought to, is sincerely, oh man, I love doing the Vic and Sate cast with Jimbo.
Oh boy.
Any South African listeners? And anyone in any like exotic countries listening?
But General MacArthur said he will come back. I believe that.
I think you were doing a good job. Keep it up. You don't know me.
Will you go away? Thank you.
Like a sound, the clear note is not heard.
And that was a smidgen of Global Elitist by the Nitroglycerin Pep Club. That was their, that's their new album, Wordland. You can find that on Bandcamp, I'm pretty sure. Thank you. Thank you for waiting. Me. And if you haven't waited, that's fine. You're doing something that you really are finding excitement and joy doing, which is the most important thing. Do not let me get in the way of you being your best version of yourself, okay? Do not let me get in the way of that. Please, never let that happen. This this just blipped my antenna. I think I'm gonna take you back inside. We're gonna go back inside. Thought it'd be fun. So this was something that I had sent to my buddy Paulie. Paulie Shores, others know him as Paul Pate. He is a music teacher. He's the saxophonist, the sexy sax player for Yachtly Crew. And he was putting on a concert, basically, with these kids, with these specific songs. And he asked me the script. Okay, so wow. So okay, so there's a is an arcade I grew up near called Galaxy World. I'm going to give you guys a break for this moment, and then I'm going to swoop back in with this story concerning Paulie Shores from Yachtly Crew. Welcome back to Inspirado Projecto, welcome back. Oh, the water's boiling on the stove again, and before we know it, we'll be drinking coffee again. Once we pour it in there with the coffee grounds, I'll have my caffeine buzzing, I'll be buzzing all around town. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. So, Paul Pate, a.k.a. Paulie Shores, my good brother. I am Stony Shores. And Yachtly Crew, he is Stony, he's Paulie Shores. We're the Shores Brothers, it's a family band. He teaches kids music. And he had this idea. He was going to put on a concert. There were a series of songs. This is the list of songs that he put together, that he had the kids learn, and he wanted to do stories. He wanted to do sort of like a big story that tied them all together somehow. And he goes, how would you feel about writing those little segments that go in between the songs? And I said, I would be honored. So I spent the whole night, I spent the night writing this script out. And okay, so these are the various songs. He wanted the whole premise was that it was you enter an arcade, you know, like a mysterious arcade, and each of these sort of arcade games sort of brought you to another song. So he'd be like, okay, this thing's happening, and then go into the song, and then song would end, and you'd have another little interlude. So these are the songs. March of the Hyperion Guards by Robert Sheldon. Oh, and this is the thing, too. These names, like whether the composers, the name of the song, I try to weave him in there. The idea was like, try to weave him in there somehow. So March of the Hyperion Guards by Robert Sheldon. Lion's Pride by Victor Lopez. Mercy, Mercy, Mercy by Joe Zawinul. Armory Embattlement by Randall D. Standridge, Martian Square Dance by D. Sorensen and B. Pearson. Those guys also did Spring's Awakening, which is another song we used. Feeling Good by Leslie Bercusi and Anthony Newley. Super Mario Brothers, and we also did Zelda by Koji Kondo and Danny Ursetti. Halo by Martin O'Donnell and Michael Salvatore, and Tetris by Hirozaku Tanaka and Danny Ursetti. Those guys also did the Super Mario Brothers and Zelda songs. So, those were the songs that I had to work with and the premise. So I grew up, so on Carroll Stream, Illinois, there was Galaxy World. And that arcade, our parents told us, don't go up to Galaxy World. They remember reading in the newspaper one time, some teenagers getting rowdy and some kid throwing a bottle in the parking lot. And that was like the only excuse they had for us not going up there. Well, we were spending our allowance. I think we'd get like, it all depended on the chores, you know. That would, you know, I don't know, every 2 weeks or something, we'd get $10. Maybe? Is that what it was? I can't remember. But we would save our money. And then we would go up to Galaxy World, and we'd spend most of it playing Dragon's Lair. Rolling Thunder was another fun one. Empire City was another fun one. Outrun, Josh loved that. Wait, yeah, Josh loved Outrun. There's a game there where I learned how to drive stick shift. It was awesome. It was the first game I'd ever encountered where you sit in a driver's seat. It had a clutch. It had a steering wheel. I mean, it was the first one with a clutch, as far as I knew. And I had a Datsun. Rusty Datsun that was given to me by my cousin Kelly. And it was missing a clutch. So while I saved up money to buy that new clutch to get that fixed, I think even Rob Houston fixed the clutch for me, now I think about it. Or one of Josh's friends. He knew so many good... Oh, the Bernhardts, the Bernhardt brothers, those guys did it. So... Galaxy World. So while I, you know, was waiting for that clutch to get fixed, I would go to Galaxy World and I'd play this video game that you know, simulated the clutch. And I'd somehow go out there into that front yard. You know, I'd go out there in the yard and I'd sit back there, sit in the car. I didn't have the keys or anything. I'd pretend I was driving it. You know, I'd visualize what I was doing on the video game. I'd have the parking brake on. And I'd go, you know, lift, push down the clutch, lift up the clutch, push down the gas, and that swimming kind of vibe. So, here we go. Here we go. Without further ado, imagine, if you will, a bright, warm summer day. You and your friends just now entered a dark, magical, air-conditioned wonderment of kaleidoscopic lights. It's your favorite arcade, Galaxy World. Blippity-bloops and bleeps echo from every direction as your squinty eyes slowly open to the hypnotic walls. Galaxy World's owner, Mr. Robert Sheldon, is smiling near the door. "We have a new game that'll heighten your imagination. Follow this way," he says while leading everyone along a winding neon path, curving through the hustle and bustle. Eventually stops everybody at the end of a blinking hallway, a tall, sparkling, silver, octagon-shaped arcade machine faces your group. "Go ahead and test it out," Mr. Sheldon exclaims. You and your excited buddies run up to the arcade, buckling into the ergonomic seats attached. Everybody straps on their mirrored bubble helmets, glimmering boots, and shiny gloves, too. He explains, "After the countdown, I'll push the button. Your subatomics will morph into a world of pixelated radio waves. It took me 8 years to invent this futuristic and comfortable arcade game. I call it March of the Hyperion Guards. Are you ready for the ultimate adventure quest?" he robustly proclaims. You and your friends joyfully howl, "Yes, please!" All simultaneously, a robot voice counts down. 3, 2, 1. Squank! You feel your physical body pouring like sand through an hourglass of circuits. The world you know disappears. March of the Hyperion Guards by Robert Sheldon plays. You and your adventure buddies emerge from a twirling rainbow portal in a forest near a wooden sign reading, "Welcome to Goldshire." It is at the beginning of a dirt path leading into town. Everyone looks pixelated, and so does the world around you, including a laughing dwarf and a night elf hanging upside down from oak branches. Your group waves and continues along the path, getting used to this new environment. You eventually reach a tavern where a kobold is showing an eternal some levitation skills.
"I own Lion's Pride Inn," the eternal says to you. "My name is Victor Lopez. Welcome. You're invited to explore it before you go on to your next adventures."
He opens the doors to a happy crowd of visitors. Your buddies high-five each other and enter this crazy place. Lion's Pride by Victor Lopez plays. Your group meets interesting characters, distant travelers, and a wild hammer name tag who says, "Joe Zawinul's hosting a jazz open mic near a campfire on a roof. Join us!" It sounds fun, so you and your adventure buddies float through the sky and the ceiling, then onto the roof to watch the magical jazz vibes. A goblin on stage next to the campfire says into the microphone, "Thank you for appreciating the art form of jazz. The next piece I call Mercy, Mercy, Mercy." You and your friends sit on the floor to soak in the smoothness while the crowd claps and yaps along. Yee-hoo! Mercy, Mercy, Mercy by Joe Zawinul plays. Bartender Farley notices you and says,
Methinks your party needs supplies.
Yes, where can we get tools, books, ingredients, and alchemy? Asked the group.
Talk to the orc, Randall D. Sandridge at the armory,
replied Farley.
He'll set you up real good.
The adventurers find the armory in town. Randall helps everyone shop for items he thinks they'll need. It's a very, very dramatic moment in time, filled with lots of surprises. Armory by Randall D. Sandridge plays. After a long day of familiarizing yourself with Goldshire, belly full of mutton, layers of new medallions, bags packed with new supplies, and a lifetime of memories, your avatar bids the party farewell. You're off to examine the video gamescape. As soon as you arrive at a clearing, two E.T.-like aliens wearing mustaches appear, munching on candy corn. They both say,
"Hello, leader of your planet. This is D. Sorensen,"
states one E.T.
"And this is B. Pearson,"
states the other E.T.
"Please, Martian, square dance in this crop circle with us."
They hold their squiggly arms out to do-si-do, dropping candy corn. You set down your new supplies and medallions to dance better. They start clacking the heels of their cowboy boots. Woo-hoo-hoo! Martian Square Dance by D. Dorenson, by D. Sorensen and B. Pearson plays. After a long series of square dances, the E.T.s insist on taking you aboard their silver ship to celebrate Spring Awakening. It's a holiday of sorts where members of the community play music for the ship's indoor jungle. They ask you to be honorary guest. Spring's Awakening by D. Sorensen and B. Pearson plays. The Martians embrace you like one of their own. They feed you Martian foods and drinks. They dress your face with fake mustaches. They take you to Mars and introduce you to their leaders, Leslie Bricuse and Anthony Newley. Standing next to them are your adventure buddies. All of you get citizenship to Mars. Everyone is feeling good and partying like it's 1999. Feeling Good by Bricuse and Newley plays. After lots of laughing and celebrating with your new Martian friends, one of them brings you and your friends to a secret hatch in a tree.
"Now that you guys are true Martians, you get to see the middle of Mars,"
says Koji Kondo the Martian, while twisting its tentacles around the hatch latch. The door flies open, as he says,
"Crawl inside. Please tell the Super Mario Brothers I say hello."
You and your adventure buddies crawl into the open hatch of the tree, and suddenly everyone figures out that you're actually in a pipe. And things get strange while you pass through your very first warp zone. Super Mario Bros. By Koji Kondo and Danny Ursetti plays. After living through an even more pixelated world, with coins and mushrooms popping out of bricks, hammer-throwing turtles, and throwing fireballs, you are astounded by what's happening. Your friends are flipping out because you're all living the lives of characters from your favorite video games. During the skirmish, one of your friends finds the entrance to a forest. Huh? Everyone's inspired to explore it. Whoa! After wandering along a series of random choices, you find a dirt path and emerge from the trees into the wooden bridge of a castle moat. An elfish woman in a dress with pointy ears wearing a crown, is on the bridge too. She's riding on the back of a horse.
Hello, people, my name is Princess Zelda,
she says.
No way, no way, no way,
says your friends in unison. Zelda by Koji Kondo and Danny Rossetti plays. After losing Zelda, then going on quests upon quests and traveling familiar territory up close, to finally then save her at the end, was worth the journey. After saying goodbye to Link and Zelda, goodbye, 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 thank you for everything, you and your party come across two genies in a graveyard.
My name is Martin O'Donnell,
says one genie and spins around.
My name is Michael Saltori,
says the other genie and flips upside down.
And you all have a halo around your heads,
they both say while spinning. Everyone transports through to yet another unexpected place. Halo by Martin O'Donnell and Michael Salvatore plays. During your time hiding from forerunners, sea worms, mud wasps, and other unusual creatures, you and your friends come across a pyramid. Inside are two moths. One says,
hello, my name is Hirozaku Tanaka.
The other says,
hello, my name is Dan Reversetti. You must solve these puzzles quickly, and you can return to the land of humans.
They both say. This is crazy. This is crazy. First we're living in Halo Land, and now we're solving Tetris? Blocks of blocky shapes fall from the sky. The moths disappear. It's up to you and your friends to solve this crazy puzzle. What will happen? Tetris by Hirozaku Tanaka and Danny Rossetti plays.